Yeah, you can still lie when you're dying. It's not like they can prove you're wrong.
What's the point?
Funsies?
Funsies? Like, come on. Come on. Oscar Wilde sitting there, dying of being Oscar Wilde for too many years in a row. And all he can say is, no, it's me or those curtains.
Yeah. Like, you gotta go out as one last fuck you if you spent your entire life with your fingers.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. A show that, to understand, you have to know that there was this one time when we was just trying to summon demons, as you do, because we need the blues fame, and we weren't getting it by recording albums and then losing the masters over and over again. So we get out a copy of the Ars Goenia, and we read it wrong, and we just get this stupid model kit.
It was a nice kit. I liked it. We had a hard time getting it out of its plastic doodly frame, though. Had to use a rock.
Not even a pointy one. There were no side nippers at that crossroad.
Oddly smooth rocks.
My favorite part about when I see you guys do this live in video is the fact that Jim goes full into character. He just goes. You start out eyes closed as if you're channeling something from beyond the grave back to you. But when you start, your eyes are closed. It's like you're making a prayer to someone. Help me get through this, old blues man. Come to me, old blues man. Speak through my soul, old blues man. And it works.
See, it. You say that like I'm not channeling some sort of ridiculously old, dead, time-traveling blues man who has misadventures in the supernatural with aliens and shit every week. That I'm just making this up completely extemporaneously.
This is some sort of improv sketch that we've been running almost consistently for years now, and we just do it, and it all goes some sort of crazy shit, and we have no codification of this. There is no canonicity.
We tried to track it, and then we realized that there were two drummers with the same name, or one drummer that died twice.
One of the two, and you were a drummer, and we weren't a drummer, and we're banned from like 5 countries, and we were only 7 episodes in, and I still have that book.
We need to do a Halloween episode where you just do this like as long as you can, 30, 40 minutes, and I'll just play the straight guy the entire time. It'll be awesome.
Oh, we got schemes for these characters now.
No, dude.
Schemes and doings and hijinks and possibly a shenanigan.
We've also just done that at home when Sam is home and we're having dinner. We've just broken into character and kept it going for the entire meal. You have to.
That's it. I'm coming back to Toronto sometime just so that I can see that.
That's great. In fact, yeah, no, it's BottoCon. It'll happen.
Yep.
It might be Christmas this year.
So we need cheap suits. Like,
oh yeah, like the one suit I own is actually expensive. Fuck.
Yeah, right? Like, yes.
Pinstripes. Lots and lots of pinstripes.
Well, I own a pinstripe suit. It's 16 years old, but it was $100 when I got it.
Well, that is for some measures cheap.
Yeah, but there's no way you can convince me either of the blues musicians had $100 between the two of them at any point in their collective lives. So we need to find suits that are like $4.
Yeah.
Like you walk into a Value Village and they're like, no, seriously, just take these and leave. We're pretty sure they're cursed.
Well, of course. That's the whole story.
Yeah.
And there's the first episode for Halloween, the curse of the $4 suit.
Well,
yep.
Episode.
See, and I'm saying this now. There's a Patreon goal where we start doing these live. So you can see the two of us attempt to get into character for this.
What do you mean attempt? This is the easiest thing in the world.
No. He's right. Jim, you can just like turn it off on a switch. I can see Scott has to get in the mindset. Studio. Think about it. Channel that old blues man from deep inside his soul. Or the nether realm. Or the dark forces, whatever, he gets it. But Jim, you know, flip a switch.
Yeah, of course. Like, even right now, I'm just I'm back in my normal voice, so I'm sitting up straight again. My mouth aperture is properly spaced and my eyes are completely open.
All right, so pick of the week. What you got, Jim?
New Doom. So New Doom was on the cheap on Steam like 2 weeks back. And it was, you know, hey, we're putting out all the DLC. It's all together now. You can basically get all of New Doom for $25 Canadian. And I'd wanted to buy New Doom last year, but just never really got around to it. It was one of those things where every time I bought it like 3 or 4 times at work and then would return it within the same shift because I just couldn't justify it. Because as much as New Doom is a blast, it's also kind of short. Like, I plow through the bitch.
Well, it's decent. It is a bit long by modern shooter standards.
Yeah, but comparing it to Doom 2, right?
That's still no shine on, like, Dishonored 2 or even Prey.
Yeah, like, Prey had more time to it by far, and I got deeper into Prey. But, so, no, I picked it up finally, and I played it, and it's a blast. It's wonderful. Like, and I say this as the crotchety old Doom fan who will just constantly go back to Doom 2 and re-downloaded Doom 1 again and am playing through that. And it's nice to see what you retain 19 years after you've finished a game where you're still getting all the secrets because it's, oh, right, I remember the exact trigger point for that. I have no idea why I encoded that into my brain, but I did.
Man, I'm pretty sure I can't remember calculus anymore.
Yeah.
But I know where to find the chainsaws.
Yep. I know exactly what I need to do to open this door, but for the life of me, I do not remember that teacher's name.
Yeah,
anyway.
Like, I remember cheat codes to Jedi Knight 2.
Oh, I have coworkers that I have to look at their name tag.
This doesn't exactly qualify to Doom, but I don't care. I downloaded the remake of DuckTales, the video game.
Ooh.
And I was playing that game, and all of a sudden, you know, the start of level, I went left. I don't know why I went left. I just did by instinct, and then I found a secret passage that I must remember, muscle memory from all those years ago.
Yeah.
Going left. Something tells me to go left. Sure enough, hey, there's a secret passage. How did I know that? Oh, my God.
We trained ourselves many moons ago. But yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I've forgotten algebra. I mean, you give me an algebra problem, but DuckTales.
Go left.
Remember everything.
Yeah. But New Doom? Fantastic. If you haven't picked it up, do yourself a favor and pick it up. We are going to have to do a proper episode on Doom at some point. But it was great. It was wonderful. I have no idea what they'll do for a sequel because they kind of already went bigger and badder now. And that's what they're going to have to do again. The best I've come up with is like group glory kills where you just start smashing people's heads together and shit. All right, Jeff, what you got? How's your week?
I'm going to go with Dragon Ball Super. I got the first few episodes of this, just came out on Blu-ray, and I understand. I know it's a complete rehash of the first movie that came out, and they're going to do the complete rehash of the next movie, but I popped the Blu-ray in, I just sat there and I smiled. Hey, it's Goku again. Hey, it's Vegeta again. Hey, it's Trunks again. I missed you guys. Roshi, you're still a perv.
Yeah, but that's never going to change.
I'm still kind of a bitch, but I missed you guys. It's good to get you back. Felt like a weird family reunion.
Yeah.
The animation quality at times is god-awful.
Yeah, their in-betweeners are weird.
There's like 5 guys working on this, and 4 of them are really good, and 1 guy just got up the job because he was there.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while, like, good animation, what the hell? Good animation.
Somebody is smashing 2 potatoes together. Why is this happening?
And it's not like Dragon Ball doesn't know how to be cheap, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just have a whole episode that is a blue line and a yellow line bouncing off each other while Piccolo stares at it, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, hey, this is Dragon Ball. They know how to pad out the episodes, okay? But yes, Dragon Ball Super. I haven't really watched much of the Japanese release. I know the basics of what's coming, so I haven't spoiled anything terrible for it. But yes, this is fun. Scott, go.
All right, so I'm going to do a special shout-out to Christopher Vallon. He wrote a book, I guess a year ago or so. I got a review copy of it. I read it, and I wrote my review of it, and the book is called Sidekick, The Red Raptor Files, Part 1, and it is this guy's Tim Drake Year 1 novel. Like, straight up, no facetiousness, no oversimplification, it is... This guy really thought that he could write a Tim Drake story. It's kind of lame. And it's really obvious that he, to get it published, he just scrubbed all the proper nouns and just presumably, you know, shipped it off to some small press that was looking for anything with superheroes in it.
Just file off the serial numbers. Who's that? He's, Owl Dude.
Yeah, yeah. Straight up. Straight up, absolutely. The big difference is that instead of Tim Drake having a fully normal relationship with his dad, he has a dysfunctional relationship with his mom that gets fixed by having not Batman be his real dad, not just metaphorical dad. Anyway, I slagged it off, as is my way, in the review, and recently the author, through random Google alerts or something, stumbled upon this review, and he got mad at me for saying things that were true but hurtful, and then he started listening to the show in the hopes that we were all idiots, and that would make him feel better.
But we're not idiots, we're just liberals.
And then he realized that now we know our shit, and we can talk a good game, and now he just has to accept that. And he admitted that on the comments section. And I'm like, props for that, buddy.
You know what? I will raise a beer to that, sir. If you are willing to basically go, no, you guys chewed me out, but you know your shit, and you're going to own that? It's like, no, no, I can respect that.
That's classy.
Yeah. Like, that's showing integrity. Good on you, sir.
I have had full-on internet beef with other authors of superhero fiction. And that guy was way worse at it than Christopher.
Yeah.
Way worse.
That's classy of him enough to go, okay, your opinion of my thing sucks. I'm going to prove why. Okay, I can't prove it, but I still like your opinion.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's pretty cool.
That's honest and adult and real, and I dig it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
All I can say about
as
that.
As opposed to the general internet rule of, I don't like your opinion because you're a horrible, evil man. Monstrous human being, and I have no proof of it, but I'm still going to call you one.
Well, you are a Nazi. Remember right. That. Anytime that I disagree with you, you are invariably a Nazi. And if you are somebody who likes the idea of being a Nazi, then fuck you! Like, what the fuck?
Like, straight up. Like, the fact that we can't call people Nazis, not because it's a horrible exaggeration, but because they don't mind is weird.
Don't take that away from me! Now I gotta come up with new insults. And that's precious nanoseconds that could be burned on doing other things.
If I call them the Khmer Rouge, they're not gonna get it.
Well, basic throwback is always just fuck rag, right?
Yes. Yeah,
like there, done. But I would rather call you a Nazi, because everybody gets that. Stupid modern world.
But it's the children who are wrong.
No. This Chris guy sounds alright. Good on you, sir.
Alright, so our topic for tonight, we're keeping up with Summer of Mecha. We're talking about season 2 of Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans, and this
Woo!
Was nice. So, we left off on season 1, and my anticipation for season 2 was that we're going to see these guys succeed, and we're going to see them split. They're going to disagree on what they should be going. Org is going to go way too far pursuing something. It's going to hurt people, and there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth as brother turns on brother as the whole thing collapses. That was my anticipation. I was ready for that. I was ready for, you know, the version of we used to be friends, but now we fight on opposite sides, but actually caring about that plot, that, you know, story element for once. Instead, what we got was that season 1 had these characters establish ambitions, ideals, and bonds. And as their ambitions more and more exceeded their grasp, their bonds got even tighter, and as they fell, that made it all hurt.
And just stripping meat from bone.
Just flensing knife every third episode.
Yep.
Well, I often criticize Gundam for being too predictable. And I didn't really like the first half of the second season because things kind of fell exactly how I thought they were going to go. I thought, okay, McGillis is either going to manipulate to start working for him, or is just going to straight up ally with them. And then at some point, Tekkonen is going to realize, oh my God, this McGillis guy's a monster. We have to defeat him. And for the first half, it's like, yeah, okay, they're allying with him. Everything's going as planned. And then everything turns on its head. Everything starts going downhill for everyone. As Gundam Seed Destiny for its perfect victory, This was still a victory, but it was by no means perfect.
Oh, no. We lose way too many decent people.
Well, okay.
And that's noted by not Big Boss, right?
Yeah.
Decent people are the first ones to die in this war. And that son of a bitch deserves the fucking death he got. One thing I will give this, we will go whole hog into, you know,
the spoilers.
Iokujan after. But this Gundam does a really good job of making you hate. Like, you grow to despise some of the antagonists in this. While you're still recognizing that the guys you're rooting for, like, Mika shoots a man 5 times in his own office.
Yeah.
This is your protagonist. This is your hero. He outright murders people. And it's not even new. Like, we had to deal with that in season 1, but you can kind of get far enough out, you almost forget about it. It's just, they're child soldiers. They're fighting to survive. They're fighting to make their place in this world. And then it's, no, seriously, they're murderers and maniacs. And it's kind of not their fault, but at the same time, like, they're not really, where they want to be is vague and amorphous. And how they get there is to constantly shear off a little bit more humanity every single time.
Yeah. Well, that's one theme of pretty much this whole show is, what are you willing to sacrifice to get to the end? And Mika's goal from get-go, he says, I just want to be a farmer. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be a fighter, a soldier. I want to live a nice, calm, peaceful life as a farmer. But to do that, I have to do some pretty terrible and monstrous stuff.
That's it. He's got his line. It's like, look, one day I'm just going to get to be a farmer. Everyone I know is going to get to live what they want to. To get to there, I'll do anything. Everything.
Right. Except
my body doesn't even matter.
When he's presented with that, when Cudelia tells him that's the world that she wants, a world where there is no fighting. Now that that's presented to him, no longer as a consequence of his ideals of being a farmer, but as a legitimate possibility, he recoils. He says, quite openly to her and to Orga, and even to Atra, and she starts to cry when he says it to her, but it's, I can't exist in a world without fighting. And he's actually thankful when things start to break down in his own body that he no longer has to make that choice. He doesn't have to choose between farmer and fighter when basically becomes a human battery for Barbados, he has no choice but to be fighter. And that's kind of what he really wanted. Like, farmer was always this personal delusion of, maybe I can put the sword aside, maybe I can hammer it into a plowshare. But he eventually just goes, no, I like it better as a sword.
Was it Julia or Julieta?
Yeah.
The one, at the end, he just, you know, she just asked, look, the fight's over. You're gonna fight well, but at the end of the day, it's 1 versus 100 anymore. Tekadan's fallen. It's all over. Just stop. And he goes, I've got nothing to fight for but my survival now. And he's smiling. He's happy about it. He's like, okay, forget all this other bullshit. Forget everything else. I have one simple goal: kill them all and live to fight another day.
Well, yeah, like, she calls him, she goes, you know, what cause are you fighting for? You're doing a purposeless battle. And he goes, cause? Nothing. Purposeless? Maybe. Like, it's this recognition that at this point, I'm killing for the sake of killing. And let's be completely honest about Mika in Barbados Rex. That's not a fight. He is not fighting anyone. The only thing in this series that is a legitimate challenge to him is that goddamn mobile armor. Everything else is murder.
Yeah. Once he gets Lupus Rex and he's got all the tools, that thing is a demon.
Yeah.
It slaughters everything it comes in contact with.
Well, the first time he cuts loose with just Lupus, I'm watching this thing fight, and I'm like, this thing might actually be as fast as God Gundam. And to even have that spark in my head, that this thing, as a melee combatant, might be as fast as a goddamn mobile fighter? Like, what the fuck?
And again, they introduce it dropping it from orbit. And he just sort of shrugs it off. Like, Gundams don't get dropped from orbit.
Yeah.
There's stuff involved in dropping things from orbit. You need equipment. And even then, you slow down and land and maybe fight. or you resupply. And this is just like, no, drop him.
Yep. He lands, well, Orga told me to not let you die. And it's like, wait, how? What?
Well, I remember the line, he comes in when McGillis is going down to get the bail, and Mika's just hanging around in the Barbados Lupus, and he says, can I attack yet? No, not yet. How about now?
Not yet. Can go.
Finally. And he just butchers everything. Well, and he's just sitting there going, can we fight yet? I'm getting bored.
Well, I like,
I mean,
the fact that
he lets that thing loose. I mean, it's really ugly.
Like, when he's fighting Garyo in the chamber with Bale, Garyo cuts loose. Like, Ein Dalton needs to actually die. Like, yeah. he needs to fucking die. He didn't get the message in the first season. He refused to die at the end of it. And then he comes back sort of as, like, backup RAM for a Vajra system?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what the hell are you? Just die. But Mika still doesn't need to cut loose. He doesn't remove the limiter. Like, Gaio clearly has. Like, Garyo is, he cuts loose with that. Ein is acting as the backup. Like, that thing is going balls out. The eyes go red. We know what that thing's doing. And Mika's just kind of impressed by its output.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, that's surprising. And you, like, almost,
wow,
get this vibe
you
that
might be difficult to beat.
Like, he's looking at it and kind of thinking, you know, this might actually be a suitable opponent for Akihiro. But
he would
against,
make a good sparring partner.
Yeah, against Mika? No. No.
And, like, and all the while, like, even as we see Mika just sort of embrace being a monster, being an instrument of doom, we care. And we feel bad. We feel for just how much he's losing and how it doesn't seem to faze him. Like, you know, he's just getting hauled around over people's shoulder. Yep. Like, at no point does anyone say, you know, we could get him like an automated wheelchair or something, right? No, it's fine. We'll haul him.
Yeah, we'll leave him tethered to this thing. You know, he's talking about how he's sustaining memory loss because he doesn't remember certain things. And it's like, well, of course not. Your entire right side is shut down. You're stroked out, buddy. Like, there were times where I'm watching his face just to see if they put in the little proper detail of the fact that his mouth shouldn't have been moving on that side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we really get the example of it because he accepts all of it. It's all part of Orga's plan as to where they need to go. And you see how much pressure this is putting on Orga. Like, as he slowly tries to find ways. Like, this is not the Tekadan that just rams through every problem because the problems are getting bigger and harder and heavier. And now they're exacting tolls that he didn't want to pay. So he tries to find other routes, going so far as to actually contact that, like, Rustal asshole. And be like, no, you know, I'll give you McGillis.
Like, look.
I'll give you myself. Just, like, let them leave.
Yeah, like Orga sees it. It's like, he sees it, it's done. And the audience knew it 10 episodes ago. And Orga catches on, and it's like, oh man, I know how many episodes this series is going to run. This is going to be hard.
Yeah.
Like... Even just losing
the
turbines.
Oh, jeez.
That's... Okay. So, do we want to go straight into EOC right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck this guy.
We're
gonna go to EOC.
This guy. Okay. I talked about this because I watched that episode. I marathoned this over the last 3 days. I spent basically from 6 o'clock to right before we started recording. I was watching it in double time on YouTube just to get caught up because I never got around to watching this. I encountered this motherfucker this morning. I can't think of a Gundam antagonist I hate more than this guy. Like, Carrazzo Rona is a psychopath who created bugs, but there's a purity in his madness. You look at it and you understand where it comes from.
Well, he has some sort of goal.
Yeah.
EOC is just propping up the status quo.
His noblesse oblige
and his
bullshit
ego.
Honor ideal.
Yeah, like, it's his ego and the status quo of the people around him that just let him run roughshod and be an idiot and ruin everything, and he's still a hero to everyone afterwards.
Yeah, his moronic followers are willing to die for him. He ignores a ceasefire. He ignores a surrender. He constantly claims, well, no, this is because my men died to protect me from that mobile armor. And it's like, and since you shot that mobile armor killed, like, 50 people at an agricultural location. You fuck. You never apologize for that. You never even care about that. You open fire on civilian workers when they're trying to escape. You use a weapon of war. You use an atrocity. Like, this guy is basically raining nukes without any regard, going, well, no, no, this is justified. This is, my men died for me, and it's, I need to get revenge for them. So I will fucking murder everybody else without any regard for their lives.
And it's Eok, just, I looked at Eok and I saw, okay, this is what happens when you take Scirocco, add a little bit of the Xeon family.
I wouldn't even say Xeon. I'd say, like, the Xeon Scar guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Those guys, you mix them together and you take out any semblance of dignity, honor. I mean, you just dig it down to the bare bones, worst qualities. But like you were saying earlier, remember, our heroes ain't exactly the most heroic people on Earth. So if you got to find some way to root for them, you got to give them the most despicable, slimy, backstabbing, egomaniac son of a bitch in Gundam history. And boy, do we get it.
But that's kind of it. Like, for all of our heroes' overt and obvious faults, Eok, he doesn't even pair off against them. He's almost self-parody.
Well, this is it. Like, yeah, our heroes are murderous. They are underhanded. They don't respect what are the classical rules of war, but they never commit an atrocity.
Yeah.
There's some honor to them.
There's no pretense. Like, there's very clearly a line. Like, this is like ancient Greece shit. There is what is near and dear to me, and then there's anything else. And anything else? Well, guess what? We'll wreck you.
Yeah. Well, Orga makes the observation to Megillus right before the end that they didn't start out with any enemies. And he's right. Before Tekadan existed, like when they were still CGC, they didn't have any enemies. But then, you know, the first unit treated the kids like garbage. So now they had an enemy. And then over time, it's just every time we wind up somewhere, somebody chooses to cross us. And now we have enemies. And Megillus just calls him on. He's like, well, enemies are enemies. It really doesn't matter where they appear from. But Eok barely even sees them as enemies. Like, he doesn't even register it on that nobility bullshit scale of how dare these upstart poor people stand their ground against me. He's still running this as though he is this honor-bound warrior. And it's like, you're not. You're not good enough. Your men died so you could escape. You shot this thing in the head in a totally ineffective manner. And Juliet won't let you die. And then, he dies. And it's not quite as satisfying as I want it to be, because it goes a little quicker and there's not enough flaying involved. But he dies.
I don't know, that must be a very painful death. Not painful very long, mind you, but very painful.
Well, I'm really hoping as he's squeezing the scissors, they're actually angled slightly below him. So, like, it crushes him from the legs up. Because I used to watch, I work nights, right? I watch a lot of TV, and one of the things they pointed out on 1,000 Ways to Die is when you get run over by a steamroller legs first, it actually pushes everything from your guts up. So that's what comes out of you before you get crushed. And part of me is like, I really hope that happens.
And you get to see it.
Yeah.
Like, if you theoretically could pass out from the pain, or you could go into shock and see it happen.
Yeah, like this is, think of it like when you're squeezing a toothpaste tube, right? Like, it's all got to come out of somewhere. And I really hope that happened to Eok.
Still got cream pie here.
Oh, yeah. But, and again, just seeing the turbines go, because...
Well, they're not bad people in any way.
No, they just run cargo.
Yeah.
Is the cargo illegal? Sometimes. Is it illegal for good reasons? Maybe. But
even that, the turbines say, okay, we surrender. Let us get the women off.
Yeah.
We'll completely give up. And he still attacks.
Did anybody see that ceasefire signal? No, sir, we didn't. Okay, good. Open fire. And it's like, you goddamn cowardly, useless motherfuckers.
Well, Eok is desperate for victory. I'm going to win this battle, whether there's a battle or not.
Well, he has to prove his honor for the sake of his men's death, right?
But there's no honor gained in anything he does.
No, like, not even remotely.
Eok is just this parody of Galio and Megillus,
yeah.
Right? Like, he is everything. He says everything that they are, and he's just a goddamn idiot.
Yeah. But it's noted by the people around him. Like, Rustal constantly says, don't go into this fight, moron. The only reason you're here is because your men are freakishly loyal. So we can send them to die. You need to stop going to die. And Julieta's like, no, you're not good enough. You're not a competent pilot. Stop doing this. Like, in that regard, he's almost a parody of Issue from season one. But she was actually an all right pilot.
Well, she was all right. She was just sort of, you know, hopped up on ceremony more than fighting, right?
Yeah.
She trained more for formations than for, you know.
I love that. Here is our declaration of combat, and Mika just starts fucking them up.
I have to step back and say, they brought back the beat stick for this.
Yes.
As much as I loved chainsaw wrench thing, stick.
Yeah. The brutality in this show cannot be understated. Like, the first death that really hit me in the chest is Aston. Because that didn't need to happen. You watch Aston die, and it's just, it's like Takaki is trying to reach for him through the broken gap into the cockpit. And you can tell by the look of it, that is half of a human being. That is not a complete human being sitting in that cockpit anymore. That is a torso, because the legs aren't attached. And they just, they don't mince about it. They don't dodge about it. This is a brutality level that we haven't seen in Gundam in a long time.
And then they just up it, because they give us double bugs. Yeah. I don't know what to describe the mobile armors in this show as anything but double bugs.
Well, plumas are just straight up nightmares, and whatever the fuck that mobile armor was actually called, because I didn't catch its name, and I just call it a dragon, because it's a fucking dragon. Like, Carrazzo would have looked at this thing and went, oh my god.
You monster.
Why didn't I think of this? Like, well, we're going to specifically design a mobile weapon to kill humans with a tracking system specifically calibrated for humans. And it's going to be accompanied by evil little monsters. Hashmal?
Hashmal's the name, which is...
Well, it doesn't give a good explanation as to what
angels,
the gun is.
Of course.
Of course. Of course. But...
Well, they...
These things, they consume. They're just... They're eaters, and Hashmal is there to murder. Straight up. Openly and honestly. And you kind of understand why beam weapons are terrifying, and why they're not common, either.
Well, I like that the explanation they give is like, okay, the Gundams were created not for some big war.
Just to stop these.
Like, okay, yeah, you would have to be pretty brutal, nasty, and really horrible to kill that thing.
Well,
but Mika's able to do it. That's the only time outside of the final battle where you think he's like, you can see he's like, oh, this is going to be a little tougher than usual.
Yeah.
This is going to be hard. And also, they should have given Mika a seat in Parliament for that. Those are the rules.
Yeah.
Well, like, the fact that that's some obscure rule is great. And then I'm like, no, Mika gets a chair. Those are the rules.
Yeah, that's how that works.
I don't think Mika's putting on a suit going into vote. I just don't see it happening.
You can put a coat over his shoulders. It'll be fine. I want an explanation for why they were made. Like, who made Hashmal in the first place?
Like,
who made the plumas? When was this ever considered a reasonable thing to do?
Like, how bad was the Calamity War?
Yeah, like, what was the preamble to it, right? Because the Calamity War was supposedly just the mobile armors versus Gundams, and it's... So how did you hit a point in human history where it's, okay, we need to create an AI-controlled mobile weapon specifically designed to target large contingents of humans and remove them from existence?
I don't know. I think it sounds like something Big One Zabi would come up with.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, no, Garen would pay the money for this. That's the first thing I said Garen. When I saw this was the Zabis would be like, oh my god. Oh my, how?
I need 15 of these.
Yeah, once the Hashmal is mass-produced.
Like, drop. We're making more, a few of these things.
Yeah.
Drop three of these on Earth, it'll take care of our problem in no time.
Yeah, and then it'll apparently travel to space.
Still down there. Oh, well.
Like.
And, yeah. And then, you know, so they take Nadze from us.
And Amita.
And
Amita goes out like a boss.
Oh, absolutely. Well, everyone goes out like a boss.
Yeah, like, but it's, they're dying on their own terms. And that's what makes it hurt kind of more, except for laughter.
Well, that's it. And they take Amita and Nadze. And two episodes later, they kill off Laughter and Azzy in the fucking...
No, Azzy lives.
Bear. Oh, yeah.
No, because she's just stuck in the hospital until you see her at the end, and she's dressed up like Nadze, and it's... That's correct.
Nice.
That
but
is
like,
perfect.
Like, laughter gets shot up in the Build-A-Bear workshop.
Five goddamn bullets through a window, you chicken shit piece of crap, Nobilis. Of course, in the end, that fucker takes four bullets through a bathroom door. So, at least Ride was conscientious of cleanup. he waited until it would just make it easier for the janitors. Then they just got to deal with a body and blood, right?
Well, I mean, typically...
It's already a drain there.
Well, yeah. Typically, when you kill someone, they void themselves.
Yeah, well, that's how muscle relaxation works.
So, I mean, he was already in the right spot for it.
But to see Ride hit that level, right?
Well, even just going back to the fight on Earth at the beginning, it's like, yeah, you can get out. You can leave with your sister.
Yeah.
But by the way, Radice's in this room and here's a gun.
Yep.
You can if you want.
You're going to make your decision.
Like, you're out no matter what you decide here. But
yeah,
it's loaded.
And I do like seeing Takaki at the end.
Yeah.
I like seeing that he's managed to kind of turn things around. He's doing better for himself. Actually, kind of speaking of the lower side cast, it's Yamagi, right?
Yeah, Yamagi.
Okay, so Shino and Yamagi.
I ship it.
I love the fact that they peeled away the pretense right after, right? Like, it's you see the two of them together, and you get that vibe, and not in the bullshit animu Gundam Wing style
well, not,
maybe.
Not in the fanfic sense where if they're in the same room ever, it's canon.
Yeah, it's, you're looking at Yamagi, and it's, no, you, like, you care about Shino more than just as a friend. This is your genuine love interest. And Shino kind of seems to pick it up, but kind of still rolls with it. And then you get that flashback bit with Gene, and Eugene's like, yeah, he knew. He completely knew. He actually didn't seem that opposed to it. That's why there was that proximity between the two. That's why he makes the comment of, you know, I'm not afraid of those guys when I know you're mad at me. And then...
And there's something, like, again, we come back to, like, weird-ass medieval imagery for this show. Like, he's riding into one last fight with his lover's token wrapped around his gauntlet. And I'm like, oh, buddy.
And it's, but...
I know you can't make the shot just because this is halfway through the show.
But you want him to.
Make the shot.
Like, you're sitting there, you're watching it, and it... Like, because I'm watching it. I watch him shoot, and because I want Rustall to fucking die. I'm like, he's going to hit. He's going to hit. And it's a glance, and it's like, why didn't you aim just, like... 2 degrees lower. Cut the stem off the fucker.
No. Well, and that's it, though. Like, he could have hit the reactor core.
Yeah.
He could have. Easiest shot in the world, right? With that gun.
Yeah, especially since they point out that is a legitimate version of that weapon. Right. That is not just the steel spikes they're launching. Like
That's the depleted uranium and tungsten core round.
Yeah, that is part of a Gundam frame Dantzlef that he is now shooting. That will go through a battle cruiser. And it's all you gotta do, center mass, dude. Center mass.
But he's gotta hit the bridge, because that's where it'll hurt.
Yeah.
And
he misses, and you watch him scream and rush into it, and it's just, you don't want this. You don't want any of this. And poor Orga is there watching this the same way we are, and it's, we need to go get him. And just seeing how far Orga is cracking by that point, and of course he is. Like, the others don't give Orga... They do and they don't give Orga the credit he deserves. He is bearing all of this for them. Because they don't have to make that choice. As much as they're all in it together, he's still the one saying, go out there and do it. Go out there and do that. Like,
or we have to go.
Yeah.
Which is even harder.
So to say, no, we need to go get Shino, and Gene goes, we can't. That's the point to this. The ticker's counting down, and it's almost going to go. If we're still here, we're fucked. And you know that. This was your plan. And then later on, we get Orga taking 12 fucking shots to the back. And it's...
We all knew it was coming.
Well, we all saw this coming by that point.
Well, here's the thing. Like, again, he's the big brother in a mech show. So I'm sitting down through episode 2 and I'm like, man, it's going to be rough when he dies halfway through this.
Yeah.
And he didn't die halfway through this. We got to the end and we see that there's no good way out.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally, these guys are going to run away, move to the colonies, take up new names, never speak to each other again.
Yeah.
That's the win condition now.
It's we disappear, and that's okay. That's an acceptable outcome.
And then Orga, having orchestrated this for his family, just 12.
Yeah, right into the back. Two shots, to his damn credit, because we haven't seen him fight in a long fucking time, and he drops two of those assholes. And just to make the comment of, I'm a pretty good shot, and he just starts walking.
And it's, again, the only thing Orga knows is forward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's going to die walking with his guts hanging out,
yeah,
because that's all he's capable of.
Yeah. It's go forward. That's the completion of Ride's slow descent into murderousness.
It's like, yeah, I got a mobile suit now. I can help. And he gets so many close calls.
Yeah, and then it's, you know, the boss gave his life for me, and it's because of this guy. It's because of him that Orga's not around anymore.
I remember back in season one, I predicted that, Orca's going to die in season two, and Miko's going to turn into the Punisher. I was right, I just got the wrong character.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Like, Ride still having a hit list is like, yeah, yeah.
Well, he's out there, he's got Mika's jacket and Orca's scarf, and he's making a point.
Yeah.
And if there is a movie, I'm betting he's the central character.
Well, okay, so that is a weird thing, is that the voice actor for Mika said, see you in the movie version, at a fan event after the finale. And I'm assuming that has to be the recut, right? Like, this is getting the special edition. You know, we're going to do like two to four of these at 80 minutes a pop and tell the story again, right? Because there's no sequel to this.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I thought was interesting is they give us a very long postscript. Like, okay, here's what happened after. All those things they were fighting for, all the things they wanted, they actually still happen.
Well, it's so fucking refreshing to get a Gundam show with an epilogue. Because we usually don't, right? Like, there's little things. There's like, oh yeah, here we blew our budget on the fight, and here's just some pans with our characters looking a little older and a little wiser, right? Like, yeah. Oh hey, here's everyone wearing the same uniform, or you know, we finally find Shiro and he's living in a cabin in the woods. Like, we haven't had an epilogue for a show this long since Victory, and it's kind of the one that most needed one. Because we saw everyone get put through the ringer and saying, this was so bad that Rustall had to dissolve Galahorn, restart it as a more democratic thing, let Mars run its own business, and oh, now what's left of Tekadon is like NGOs trying to help child, you know, and child labor.
Well, I like the fact that Dante's in charge of the orphanage.
Oh.
Like, that's just amusing, right?
I'm so glad he made it out.
Yeah.
Like, Danji, yeah, he made it.
Well, after it ended, I remember I tweeted something that sounds really good, and I'm shocked it came out of my head. I think the whole premise of the ending is saying, okay, just because the world changes doesn't mean that the person who ends up in the history books changed it.
Yeah.
Well, Fast forward 50 years in this universe, they're going to look back and say, okay.
The McGillis incident was so bad. Like, the McGillis incident was so bad, it crippled Galahorn and forced sweeping reforms for a more democratic society.
Yeah.
Rustall is the hero of the McGillis incident.
Yeah, it'll be a footnote. Tekadon, everything that's been done by them, depending on the history book, won't even be mentioned.
Well, they put that in front of you. They don't say, yeah, and history won't remember these guys, but the Tekadon Memorial, the last four names are carved in with a knife.
Yeah.
Not all the heroes end up with statues, okay? So, there are some guys who change the world you never heard of and you never will.
Like Julieta gets to retire as the Demon Slayer, but it's clear that all she's going to do is be Galio's nurse.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with them hooking up.
Yeah, well, that's the not Garma. You never hate not Garma, right?
Well, there's... Like, here's the thing. This Gundam is famous for having a Char type in every episode. Or every series. We've only gotten, like, two Garmas now. We're at two Garmas.
Yeah.
And one of them's just Garma.
Yeah.
So seeing a Garma get something out of it is nice.
Well, that's it. And again, you don't hate him, even because he doesn't go after Tekadan. He's after McGillis. And he's after McGillis for perfectly justified reasons. You betrayed me, and you fucking killed me. Like, those are reasons that Tekadan... We've rooted for those reasons for our boys on several occasions. So you can't really disagree with him on it. Plus, McGillis isn't really that good a person either.
Well, okay, and so I come back to, again, the so what of Gundam is always that there's, you know, about four themes that really matter, right? There's war is hell. Humanity can be better.
Understanding.
Yeah, like humanity can be better, and buy all our playsets and toys, right?
Yeah.
And this show, you know, it hits war is hell really well. And not, like, and doesn't overplay it, but just sort of shows you, these are the facts of the matter. Ain't that rough.
Yeah.
And unlike a billion other Gundam shows, the second one, that humanity can be better, isn't... It's not psychic powers, it's not new technology, it's not some bizarre, radical, conversion to ultimate understanding or super pacifism or something. It's, no, we saw how bad this was, and we changed it.
We chose to initiate a system so we didn't do this again.
We sat back and said, this was really bad. We're reforming Galahorn, we're giving Mars more independence. And, like, we get best ending, even though no one's alive to see it.
Yeah, we're signing a treaty right at the end that says human debris aren't allowed anymore. Children have rights. And it's, what an astonishing idea.
Right.
But it's this real optimism. It's not, man, one day we're all going to be so gunned up on Minovsky particles we can read each other's minds.
No,
it's no, we've been shit to each other. Let's stop.
Yeah, you want to make a better tomorrow? Make a better tomorrow. Look at the guy next to you and go, I don't actually have a reason to hate you. Unless the guy next to you is Iokujun, at which point, yes, you do.
You just throat
knife
punch
him.
You just throat punch him.
Yeah.
You watch him gurgle and recover.
And then you do it again.
And then you do it again.
Until he stops wiggling.
Yeah.
But yes. Remember, if you remember the end of Gundam Wing, Zex, a.k.a. Miliardo Peacecraft, came up with a batshit insane idea of, okay, we're going to have a war so incredibly horrible that no one will ever go back to anything like it again.
The war to end all wars. We've had two of those at this point.
Right, and I think that's kind of what they're saying is like, hey, there's a reason that this keeps happening. A nightmarish, horrible war happens, and there's a lot of peace because nobody wants to go back there. But we're going to end up going back there again.
Well, people will forget. That's the truth we're living in right now.
Well, like, Galahorn was set up because the Calamity War was so bad, we can never do that. We can't have cyborgs anymore. We can't have AI anymore. We can't let this happen, so let's just clamp down on people's rights so they'll be safe.
Yeah.
See?
And then you fucked over...
Space and Mars.
Yeah, yeah. You left Mars fucked over, and, well, now... We had a war so bad we can't let it happen again, so let's try it this way.
Actually,
Mars is going to be great until the next planet gets colonized, and oh, fuck.
Jupiter.
Like the men from Jupiter are coming.
Well, speaking of Galahorn...
For your teenage girls.
Their weird philosophy in regards to the Bale? Like, even though it never pans out, the fact that McGillis's plan was effectively, I have Excalibur... I am King Arthur now?
Well,
do as I say?
Like, that reflects his weird fairy tale understanding of how the world works.
Yeah.
And that's the breakpoint of the series, is that this guy's ideals and his ambitions are just out of his reach because he didn't grasp that that's just a story. That's the history. That's not even history. That's the story Galahorn tells.
That's the legend.
To justify what they do. So, yeah, you got a bunch of young officers on board, and you got a bunch of guys who said, fuck no, and a bunch of guys who said, yeah, we're going to lean back here till you're done.
Yeah, we're going to walk away from this because it's not worth the headache. But that's it. It's like, why would you assume that would work?
Well, like, I remember it's just, online, it's crazy. Right after he took control of the Bale, a lot of people were speculating, okay, the Bale's going to have this power, to remotely control other suits. It's going to have some superpower we don't know about. Nope. It's going to be some kind of trick. And when you find out, no, it's just a regular Gundam.
Like, the Gundam nice Bale suit. Has two swords, and that's its power.
Its power is it's got two shiny gold swords and apparently a fairly high output
generator.
There is
no magical power behind this Gundam. What was made you so sure that it was, you know, get you control of everything?
Because McGillis just bought the hype.
Yeah, he and read into it, he believed it, and it's, but this is how things are supposed to work. Bale chose me, so you have to do what I say. And it's like, that's not how a system of government is not determined by a woman in a lake throwing swords at people.
Oh, God, the Bale's in a lake, isn't it?
Yes.
There's a woman gatekeeping it at the end. Motherfucker.
Yes. Yeah. A woman in a lake threw a sword at McGillis, and he thought he was in charge.
Come and see the violence inherent in the system. Come and see the violence inherent in the system.
Some watery tart lobbed a scimitar at me, and I called myself king. You'd lock me up.
Well, he's convinced that since he got the Bale, he has pulled the sword from the stone. Yeah. He is now the king.
And it's like, no.
And Rustle's like,
doesn't work like that
no,
anymore.
I have rail guns.
Yeah. You know why Arthur became king? Merlin.
Well, no, Arthur became king because the Romans didn't have rail guns.
Fair.
Wait, also, no. The Saxons. The Saxons. It's the other way around.
Yeah, but let's be honest. The Saxons wouldn't have needed railguns if not for Merlin. They'd have just beaten them with rocks.
Well, also, there was a wall.
Fucking Hadrian.
Fuck Hadrian.
But what you're saying is for McGillis to win with the Bale, he needed a wizard?
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly what we're saying. An actual wizard with actual magic. Because otherwise, no!
Well, remember, like I said, everyone was debating what kind of magical power this thing had. Did it have, you know, the ability to remote control other suits? Did it have ability to turn off, you know, other suits? Could it, you know, did the swords have some kind of power to them? No!
No.
Just a Gundam.
It was...
Which, you know, if there weren't other Gundams out there, yeah, you'd kick ass. Unfortunately, they've got them too.
Yeah. Well, it's an impressive suit, sure. Like, when you're watching the output on the thing, it's, no, this is...
This thing's got some get up and go.
Yeah, this thing is 300 years old with zero mods that have been contemporarized. Like, zero contemporary mods. And it's just, its output is fantastic. He is just mincing through shit. Like, in the hands of a genuinely dangerous pilot, this thing would be an absolute nightmare.
Like, there's part of it, I think they might have won if they'd handed the Bale to Hush.
Yeah. But, in the end, it's
McGillis, remember, he's a pretty good pilot himself.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not shitting on his ability as a pilot, but you have to be very much a Gundam pilot if you're piloting an unmodded suit.
Right.
Because that's the other thing. Like, Galio was, as much as he was in the Camaris again...
That was a souped-up Camaris.
Yeah, they'd still tweak the shit out of that unit.
And they'd stolen so much, like, again, it's a Gundam frame, but they'd stolen so much of what they learned from the Valkyrie frames for the Vidar.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't think that might have been the best thing in the field, right?
Well, yeah, because they still stuck Ein Dalton in that thing. Motherfucker needs to die. But
he's in the wheelchair. His brain case is in that wheelchair.
Oh, yeah, no, that's why they've got the blanket in the way.
Yeah. So, like, you don't have to see his brain case.
There's a brain in a jar there. It's got a small it's got a little vocoder on it. He talks. He's like, I can't see anything. Where are we going? And a picture of Ein. Right. Well, Ein is just a kind of dismayed old man at this point. He's just, what are we doing? Are we going on a date? I like dates. Dates are fun.
What will we do? Can we go to that restaurant I like?
Ein, you don't eat. Still, I like the music. The music is nice. And I remember Lobster. Lobster was good. We are now going to write the serial adventures of Ein the Brain in a Jar.
Here's some fish food for you. I don't know how you're going to eat it, but enjoy.
No, it will clog up my receptor.
Just Ein and Galio is some dysfunctional cup. Just dysfunctional roommates.
No, that's it. Ein, Galio, and Juliet are this dysfunctional three-way relationship. Like, Ein's sitting there complaining, you didn't put a sock on the doorknob. You can't go anywhere and you have no eyes. How did you know that? I could hear you, but I couldn't hear a sock.
You don't have any ears! Not important.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, and ultimately, like, final thoughts here. Final thoughts mode. I am impressed with this show.
Oh my god, I love this show.
Like, this is... I don't have a strict top five. Like, you can't poke me tomorrow and say, what are the best five Gundam shows? And the answer is, well, there's War on the Pocket and some other ones.
And G Gundam.
Yeah, G's probably in there.
Yeah.
But, like, straight up, no, this is top five Gundam.
Yeah. Well, okay, we talked about this earlier in the week, but how do you follow this? Like, well, this is so much old school Gundam in just the meanest of senses. This is punching you right in the heart. And it's, what do you put after this? Like, if you're smart, you make more build fighters. Yeah. And you put more build fighters
like
in.
You just need to have some brain candy.
Down all that carnage.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, I think at the end of, like, after Build Fighters Season 1, I was like, man, this was really fun. I'm not sure what you chased that with. And the answer was more Build Fighters.
Yeah.
And it was more brain candy. But now I'm like, no, this is good. This is, I was happy with every episode of this.
Yeah.
I feel good just thinking about the ending and mulling over what happened and how they executed everything.
Well, my right hand, after watching that Eok shit today, my right hand was stiff. It was locked into a fist that severely, I had to open it myself. I was that enraged by this son of a bitch. That you can draw that kind of emotional response, that's a massive positive. So it's, okay, where do you go from here? Because if you give me a serious series again...
Like, if you pretend to do, like, another AU, and it's just sort of the paint-by-numbers, not-quite-Zeta thing that we've gotten a couple times...
Yeah, it's gonna get compared to this, and it's gonna flounder.
I'm just gonna be upset. Like, I'm gonna be upset for, like, 3 years because of it.
Well, imagine chasing this with Age or something comparable to Age or G-Reco.
Oh, God.
Like, it's... You're putting... Whatever you're putting next, if it isn't a complete... opposite to what we've just been through, it's you're putting it straight on the chopping block, because it's going to get compared and it's going to fail.
I personally, I didn't like it as much as you did. I still enjoyed the series, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it for nothing more than the fact that we've watched enough Gundam series that you can hit the points. Geez, okay, this is going to happen, and to a certain extent that did happen.
Yeah,
but made us care.
It was.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't how we thought. And even when we hit the point where it's like, oh, this guy's gone, I cared and I felt.
It still hurt.
Yeah, right. Like, it wasn't just predictable beats.
We saw it coming in episode one. Like, I'll go back to that with our discussion about Age when we saw that first season, that the purple haired girl, the La-La stand-in.
Yeah.
The second we saw her, like, you are dead and I know how you're going to die and when. And we were exactly right.
Oh,
we saw her, like, you are dead and I know how you're going to die.
Well,
but not in the exact way we thought it was going to happen.
The fact that Atra made it through this series.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know what? They got some weird family dynamics in this show. Like,
there are some weird people in this show.
Yeah, but I'm okay with it. Like, I actually like the fact they went whole hog on it. Like, again, I like that Shino and Yamagi were kind of a thing. I like the fact that at the end of the day, it is Atra and Kudelia raising...
Akatsuki. Which is, I like that naming trick.
Yeah.
Because Mikazuki is Crescent Moon, and Akatsuki is Sunrise.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's, you've got them raising Akatsuki together, and it's like, you know, Kudelia loved Mika. She says it. Atra loved Mika, and that's not really a question.
Mika must have been the most awkward sex ever.
Oh, God, yeah. There's no way he wasn't strapped in at the time. Like, he had to be connected to Barbados, because otherwise...
He's just sort of flop.
Yeah, and it's just... Well, I kind of like it, because they still approach all of that with the childish innocence that, despite him being a murderer, they never lose, because they never mature out of it. Like, when they go back, and Atra still hasn't told Kudelia yet, and Mako's like, so, do you mind taking care of my child? Kudelia's like, wait, you're having a kid? Yeah, with Atra. And Atra's like, wait, do you want one? Hey, Kudelia, you can have a kid with him too. And it's like, no.
It's like, that's, yeah.
We're getting weird now.
Yeah, calm down. There's one child. It's fine. We'll raise them together. And it's just, it's nice. Like, you get to the end there, and it's, you know, Gene is her bodyguard now. And I'm like, I like the fact that Gene walked away from this. Actually, to quickly skip back to Shino. I don't know why I said Shion. Shino, just for a second. I like the fact that Shino never gave up. Like, that almost psychotic silliness is there throughout. No, you know what? This Gundam frame, the florist. No, fuck that. It is the Ryusei Go 4, and fuck you for saying otherwise. Like, he's laughing all the way to his grave, but he never loses who he is. And Gene, you almost expect Gene to crack in the end, but here he is. He's working as Cordelia's bodyguard now. Chad seemingly is probably like her chief of staff or something, but they're there. They're helping. They're trying to find kind of what's left of Takedan around, but, you know, they've lost sight of Ryden and a couple of the others, and it's, if we see him again, we'll try and help him where we can. But, you know, Dante's got the orphanage. That's going well. The farms are going okay. We are trying to build a world without child soldiers. And that's great.
Like, again, they... Like there's probably a show coming in October. There's a new show coming in October, probably.
Yeah. It seems almost a foregone conclusion,
that
right?
That seems to be the pattern, and the bar for that show is so high, I can't even.
Yeah.
GM Counterattack is supposed to be sometime this month.
Yeah, but that's going to be like an hour tops.
Yeah, but that's why I'm really hoping it's going to be, by the way, here's the big reveal, new season of Build Fighters. Because that's about the only thing I can think of that you can follow this up with. Or, you know, like the 13th Gundam fight. Like,
okay, if they give me the 13th Gundam fight, I'm here.
Yeah, but it's, you need to do something that isn't the horrors of war. As much as I love the horrors of war, you need to do something that isn't that. Because if you do, you're going to draw comparison directly to IBO. And that's a big bar.
Well, you were talking about, you know, whoever's next, whatever show's next is going to have a bar to hit. I will give IBO a little bit of a pass because their bar they had to hit was Gundam Age and G-Reco.
Yeah. Oh, but they cleared that bitch easy.
Well, yeah, but it wouldn't take much to clear that bitch easy.
Fair.
You could literally just have... Yeah, you could have just had kids banging model kits together for half an hour, making the noises with their mouths, and it would have been better.
That might have cleared it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have, but it would have come close.
Because
at least that would have a sensible story, G-Reco, I'm looking at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, like I said, I don't think I enjoyed it as much as you. I wouldn't put it in my top 5, top 10, easy. But, you know, the bottom 10 or so is pretty bad. But,
Well, that's Gundam, right? Like, it's either, you get some stuff that is outright astonishing and some stuff that is so garbage bilge, you know full well the only reason you ever watched it is because they put the name Gundam on it.
Yeah, that's generally how Gundam goes. There's no real average Gundam shows. There's really good or really bad.
Yeah.
Just sometimes we have a different definition of what is one and what is the other.
Well, yeah. Some of it's always going to be down to taste. And, you know, I go back to my statement of, you know, Wing is functionally the hurdle of Gundam, where it's like, this is lowest tolerable level.
I can accept that, because I can't rewatch Wing.
But you don't hate it?
Exactly. I'm not hostile to it. I just can't go back and watch it again. Like,
and again, this is the game. We, you know, the other thing we say about Gundam is, do we tell other people to watch it? Like, when someone says, man, Gundam's a 40-year franchise, how do? I'm like, well, you can say, here's one you can start with.
Yeah. Well, I sent a coworker to watch this before I did.
Yeah.
Like, I told her about IBO, told her the second season was up and that she should probably watch it. She watched it months back, and she's been on my ass to watch this. So now I have something to talk to her about when I go into work on Thursday. But,
well. Yeah, IBO, good show. Yeah. Good gateway drug into Gundam. Whoever's got it next has got a good bar to clear.
Yeah. And you know what? Depending on who's involved in it, they'll pull it off or they won't. Like, worst case scenario, we wind up with, like, Age again. And then I just don't need to waste the time. Like, I'm okay with that.
Well, the rumor I've heard, and this is complete rumor, I have no facts to base this on, the rumor I've heard is Frozen Teardrop.
Oh.
Like a full show for that?
An OVA.
Okay, see,
like 6-8 episode OVA.
Like that seems
could be completely wrong. It's an internet rumor, and you know how well that goes.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna get that Seed movie any week now.
Get one of these days, F91 is gonna get licensed for a proper series.
Yeah, yeah, and at some point we're gonna get Crossbone, right?
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Just any day now, right?
we'll see.
Do we want to slip on Battlelog real quick, given that it just came out?
No, no, because next episode we are going to play. Next episode we're going to play catch up on the past year's OVAs and ONAs for Gundam.
That's fair. That's fair.
So we'll do some T-Bolt and some Tri-Fighters.
My favorite slasher series that isn't a slasher series.
And I guess that one episode of Origin and 2 minutes of Twilight Axis. Yeah.
Ooh, I can't wait to talk about T-Bolt. I can't wait to talk about T-Bolt.
Nope.
Yep.
Oh, well, that's... Okay, quick, because I got to go back to Eok again, because I fucking hate him. That
Squish.
Well, one of the things that I kind of wanted part of the way through, and I'd said this to Scott earlier today, is it's like, if I could do the battle log thing where it's just, you know, you pick two pilots, it would be Eok versus Fleming. Because I know the kind of shit-beating Fleming would give him. And it would be glorious. Like, all you gotta do, you put Fleming against this fucker, and he's just gonna mince him to shit for funsies. It's gonna end with him just opening the cockpit and shooting him in the knees first. Like, I know you can't go anywhere. I know you can't walk. I also know this just hurts. So I'm gonna shoot you in the knees, then in the stomach, and then if I feel like it, I'm gonna strangle you with my bare fucking hands.
Yeah. And that's going to be it. But we'll catch you next time for some more Gundam.
Have a good night, folks.
I thought this felt bad. On the outside.
Thank you for listening. I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 Unported International License. Visit our website, sblpodcast.com, for more episodes, contact information, social media links, and if you could be so kind as to, please subscribe and rate our show on your podcasting app of choice.